Welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 359. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
I'm back, but I'm not black.
Okay.
What?
yeah, and also James Jones.
Yeah, I'm here, actually, always, usually.
Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Howdy.
Howdy. How. Well, we are excited to talk about all kinds of stuff in Nintendo. This is our last show before the big telethon. We're not going to have a
recording
next week.
Oh.
You know, you'll still get like, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 hours of us.
You'll
still
get
a
way
lot of our
much.
Friends. And it will be totally crazy. So, like I said, this will be the last time you hear from us. Probably we might do like a little promo clip or something. But anyway, and then for Thanksgiving, we don't know yet. We're still trying to figure out what's going on for Thanksgiving. I'm hoping we can do maybe a short show and record it earlier in the week so we don't have to miss our plans for the big holiday. Of course, Guillaume already celebrated. So I'm hoping we can
jump the gun.
Maybe we can lean on him a little bit. But anyway, guys, why don't we kick off new business? With a few thoughts that I had on a brand new 3DS game that really has not been advertised very much at all. And that would be Jet Rocket 2. So this was it's been announced a while back, but we didn't know exactly when it was coming out. Shinen, the developer, has been teasing it. And of course, they made stuff like Nano Assault, which you might have played on 3DS or Wii U. They did Nano Stray and Iridium. and Fast on WiiWare, and some really impressive WiiWare games, including the original Jet Rocket, which was like this sort of N64 throwback style 3D platformer that was really pretty on WiiWare. And I never got to play the WiiWare game, but I always kind of was curious about it. That's why it came up a couple times in retroactive polls, but it never won. And with Jet Rocket 2 out on 3DS, I said, hey, you know, the 3D platformer seems like a good fit for 3DS. It's a kind of a genre that you don't see very much anymore. And I kind of like this developer. I mean, I love Nano Assault. So I was excited to see what they would do next on 3DS. And so I downloaded it yesterday and note that it came out on a Wednesday right after the Nintendo Direct. I didn't actually see the Direct, but did they actually like announce it or promote it or anything on the Direct?
I did not watch in real time or ever.
Yeah. I only saw the reports. I was at work when it went down. But anyway, I went on the eShop when I got home from work that day. Nowhere to be found, but I did a search for it, and luckily it was actually available, as I had heard on Twitter. So I was able to download it, but then I was surprised this morning. You know, on Thursday mornings, Nintendo does their press release with all the new Nintendo download announcements. And Jet Rocket 2 isn't even named in there. So it essentially got caught in this weird limbo between it was, you know, kind of announced like the day that it came out. So like there's no hype really beforehand, no pre-release hype. And then the very next day, it seems like it's already been forgotten. And I haven't checked the eShop today to see if they like bumped it up to the top or something. But this is, I think, a significant eShop release. And it's $9, you know. I think that's a fair price for a 3D platformer with really good graphics and good music. I'm still fairly early in the game. I'm like maybe a fourth of the way through it, and I don't think it's super long. You wouldn't really expect it to be for that price and for the eShop platform. But, you know, it is technically impressive in some ways. It has that shiny look to it that Shinen is sort of known for in their 3D games. You know, and so it looks a lot like the WiiWare game. Mm-hmm. It has a kind of a slickness to it like you see in Nano Assault. But, of course, Jet Rocket is this 3D platform about this kind of dorky-looking guy who runs around. And sometimes he has a jetpack and sometimes he doesn't.
He looks like one of the rebels from, you know, the first Star Wars movie. You know, towards the end, Death Star, you know, he's got that helmet and the orange jumpsuit, right?
Or I guess so, yeah. He doesn't have a helmet in this game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they wouldn't Mega Man Legends on us, I guess, and they took his helmet off. But
fuck safety.
he's a very generic-looking character, and Yeah, and I can't tell that there's really much of a story here, but you know, it's a nice looking game, but I have to say it's very slow paced. I mean, it is definitely paced like a N64 3D platformer. So I mean, there's no run button even. You're just kind of prancing around, and it's weird because the perspective shifts a lot. And at first I was like, oh, actually I thought this was going to be a 3D platformer. It's actually a 2D platformer because the first level is strictly 2D and it kind of teaches you the controls and a little bit of the mechanics. So you have this roll move where if you use it on the ground, it's just you push the B button. If you use it on the ground, you just like roll forward and it's kind of like an attack. It seems like a very strange thing for this character to be doing. It's like this guy looks like a human, but he rolls up like Sonic and then like shoots forward about 6 or 10 feet relative to his size. It's not really clear how he would even do such a move.
Can I just say that sounds really stupid?
it looks stupid actually, and it feels kind of stupid because it's slow. Like it's kind of slow to initiate and it's slow for him to recover from it.
Got to go fast.
And it doesn't go that far either.
It's just 10
it's
feet.
Really strange.
He's doing an egg roll basically. He's doing a gymnastics egg roll.
It's kind of like that move Blanka does in Street Fighter 2, you know, where he spins up and he goes forward like that.
But with a weak punch.
Yeah. Yeah, and then if you do the same thing, if you just push B when you're jumping, he'll do the same thing but upward. And so in that case, it's basically your double jump. And it's also, again, like kind of like a Sonic spin jump, where if you do that before you hit an enemy, you'll kill the enemy. And that's his only attack. I mean, it's really that simple of a game. There's no punch, there's no kick, there's no shoot, there's no, you know. Yeah, so the mechanics aren't super interesting so far, I have to say. I mean, you do sometimes find a jetpack power-up, and that should be exciting, but really all it does is it kind of blasts you. It's like a one-time, I mean, you get like 5 uses, but each time you use it, you just push the button, and it just shoots him up like a predefined distance upward. And then he falls back down like normal. So there's no feathering it. There's no like trying to conserve fuel or anything like that. It's a little bit more like the jetpack ability in Super Mario Sunshine, you know, except right. It doesn't send you nearly that high. And again, it's kind of slow. Like it doesn't really kick in right off when you push the button. So the whole game has this a little bit of a sluggish feel to it that I'm not a big fan of. I guess I've gotten used to maybe the more fast paced kind of, you know, a little bit twitchier platformers that have become in vogue over the past few years. You know, even stuff like Rayman Legends, which I just played recently. So I'm not real sure about the mechanics or the feel of the controls on Jet Rocket 2. But I will say, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Like in the second level, it turns into a full-blown 3D platformer. So that kind of makes me think, well, maybe that 2D level was a tutorial. And the 3D platformer, it has a kind of a fixed camera angle that maybe follows you as you go through the level, but you can't spin it around or anything. And the level is set up almost like a Super Mario 3D Land level. It's almost like kind of isometric and, you know, fixed perspective. And
you can't even lock it behind your character or anything like that? Because in the WiiWare game, well, you had to babysit the camera, and it was not especially fun. So this sounds like an improvement.
That leveled for sure. The third level goes back to 2D, which is really strange. it's not necessarily better than the 3D. It's just different, I guess. And then the fourth level, which I just started playing, goes back to 3D again. And this time they let you swivel the camera around with the L and R shoulder buttons.
What the
hell? So I don't know what the hell's going on with this game. I'm confused by it.
The 3D levels, are they still relatively linear or are they open?
They're not that open. I mean, like I said, they're more like 3D land levels, so they're pretty small environments. And even then, there's some pop-up as you go around some of the corners, which is really surprising to me because if anything, I would think Shinen's games typically have, you know, really rock-solid engines and just very impressive tech. Mm-hmm. So when I see pop-up, that's retro in a way that I don't really think is appealing.
No, because it's detrimental.
Maybe in the level 5 they'll have like a bunch of Turok fog roll in. Enemies will like pop out of from nowhere. But
awesome.
Yeah, so far I don't know if I would recommend this or not. I mean, I'm definitely still early, and clearly the game is a little unpredictable. So maybe some real crazy shit's going to happen as I get into the second and third worlds.
I don't know. It just sounds neurotic. It sounds like it doesn't know what it wants to be.
it's really odd. Maybe they're trying to ramp up to, you know, like introduce mechanics little by little, but the game doesn't really explain any of this stuff. And I mean, there's even like a wall jump ability, but it blasts you off so fast and so far that it's actually really hard to use. And I've only really found it useful in places where they very specifically and kind of very obviously have set up like two walls that are close to each other,
right.
You know, like a,
right.
You know, like something in Mega Man X where you can very clearly bounce back and forth and go all the way up, but it doesn't, he like if you just jump towards any random wall, he doesn't immediately stick to it like Mega Man X does. He only kind of grabs hold of it in a way that you can jump back off at the very bottom of it. So he'll slide basically all the way down and you can't do anything. And then right at the end,
doesn't make any sense.
It's really strange. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little disappointed so far, but I'm also just kind of weirded out and curious about it. So I'm going to keep playing and maybe, you know, maybe next week for the telethon, I can say something different about it, but it's not quite what I was expecting.
Yeah,
it sounds confused.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like what I was expecting. And I played the first game on WiiWare, and it doesn't make sense. Like the first right. The WiiWare game was more like big sprawling levels, and you had 100 doodads to collect, and
it's Banjo-Kazooie or something like that.
I guess, but it had the very basic problem: if you died or if you lost all your lives, like the levels would take a long time to get through if you were trying to collect everything, and you lost. Like you had to start over if you died,
and I think
I never bothered finishing the last level just because of that. It was. Not very
fun.
So
this one does have checkpoints.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It has at least one or two checkpoints per level so far.
Hmm.
So that they may have addressed that problem at least. But yeah, I mean, the music is good. It's always good in Shining games. Like they do like this kind of techno music for pretty much all their games. It's very high quality and just interesting. I don't know that it totally fits this game, but it sounds good. And like I said, the graphics are impressive, but then there's some, kind of like the animation's not really that great. And then some of the pop-in really took, I was like, holy shit. Like I was so surprised to see that I actually backed up. And as I backed away, you could see that stuff disappear again.
That's great.
So I mean, there's very clearly like a draw distance here that, you know, the sad thing is I was looking down this long hallway. If they'd shortened up that hallway a little bit, they probably could have covered this up and I never would have seen it.
Hmm.
So
that's called playtesting.
I'm a little dismayed.
Yeah.
So far,
hey guys, let's cut this hallway a little bit shorter. We'll hide the engine's weaknesses.
Well, you know, as good
that's
as
part of
Shining,
making a 3D game, though.
Yeah
it is.
People do that all the time.
As good as Shining is usually on the technical level, to me it feels like they never really got the 3DS right. I went from Nano Assault Neo, the Wii U version, to the 3DS one, and I was really disappointed to see like weird little graphical glitches. While, you know, like the 3DS game was one of the earliest, you know, technical showcases for the 3DS, it was not so impressive after playing the Wii U version. But yeah, like, and it was not, you know, a matter of the textures weren't good or anything like that. It was like these weird polygons that would, you know, disappear into each other and things like that.
We lost somebody.
Oh.
Johnny?
I agree, Guillaume.
Oh, thank all you. Right.
There we go.
Hey.
Hey, he's back.
Hey.
Yeah. Was I the only one who dropped?
Yep.
Great. Okay, well, I was asking Guy if he had played the EX version on 3DS or just the original.
Yeah, that's the EX version.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe they added some glitches I never saw in the original. But anyway, Jet Rocket 2, it's kind of seems to be a little bit of a missed opportunity and... but I also felt like I wanted to talk about it right away because it seemed like nobody else was talking about it, including Nintendo.
Sure.
So, it seems like an interesting release, but it, so far I'm a little disappointed in it, but I'm going to keep playing that. A couple things that I just wanted to kind of follow up on. I beat a couple of, Wii U eShop games over the past week. I finally finished DuckTales and, I definitely wanted that. That's been kind of a very, a game that's resulted in a lot of different reactions from a lot of different people and kind of wildly all over the map. I'm definitely in the camp of I'm strongly recommending it and I really, really enjoyed it. And of course I have a nostalgic connection that not everybody's going to have with it, but I think it's very high quality. It's probably the best WayForward game I've ever played. You know, I'm not a huge fan of that studio, but I think this was a really good match for them. Mm-hmm. And I think the things they've done to revise the original and to expand on it are mostly really smart and really high quality, including this final level that they did, Mount Vesuvius, which is where you go and then you get to the end of it and you fight the last boss. And that level, I believe, is completely original. I don't have any recollection of it from the original game, although it's been a long time. But I felt that level totally fit in thematically. I felt the level design was just as good as any of the other original Capcom levels. And it's challenging. It's a good fitting final level, but it's not super frustrating. I mean, none of the game I found to be extremely frustrating or anything. I mean, it certainly does. There's a learning curve and it takes a little while to get used to the mechanics and the controls of it, but it's a very tight game. Yeah. It always has been a tight game. And, I don't think they did anything to take away from that.
Yeah, if you recall the era when you could see a game over screen in a platformer, you're not going to be shocked by DuckTales, basically.
Right, right. I died a couple of times, you know, but it was never a big deal. And I never had to, like, you know, replay an entire level starting from scratch. And also, if you kind of understand your way around the levels and if you use the map that's always on the pause screen, it doesn't take very long to get through any of these levels. So like most of the time you'll spend playing the game is learning the levels. You know, the first time you go through them, you kind of get a feel for where do you need to go? Where are the important things? How do you get across this gap? And once you learn that stuff, if you ever needed to replay it for whatever reason, maybe you lost a bunch of lives on the boss, it does not take very long at all to go back through it. I really think the claims of this game being overly difficult or really super frustrating or anything, I don't get it. I don't understand how, you know, Dark Souls is so popular and yet people complain about DuckTales. It doesn't make any sense to me.
They exist in the same world, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Dark Souls? Yeah.
They exist on some of the same consoles even.
Yeah.
So, no, DuckTales is not that hard. You know, especially if you grew up on 2D platformers, I don't think you're going to have much problem with it. It's incredibly enjoyable. The music is spectacular. Now, I will say, as good as the remixes and remakes are, I still think the 8-bit music is better in a lot of cases, especially on the moon level, which is, I mean, the moon level of DuckTales probably has the greatest 8-bit song ever composed. You know, it's incredible. So, you know, as you know, there's no way you're going to do a remix that's better than the original. I mean, and I don't think this one is, but I'd heard that when you beat the game, you can turn on 8-bit music in the menu.
Nice.
And so I thought, oh, well, that'll be fun. I'll do that. And then I'll go back to the moon level and I'll play at least half of it just to enjoy the music. And unfortunately, even though this was after the patch that came out last week, I beat the whole game, no problem. But when I went back to the moon level with the 8-bit music on, the game froze up and crashed on me. And so they're definitely, I hope they're not done patching this, but I think it's a little sad when the patch comes out like 2 months after the game launches and they still haven't fixed all
the patch. Is the patch maybe related to the disc release of the game?
Which just happened. I don't know. I mean,
I think that the disc release is supposed to come out next week or this week, but I saw it last week in the store over here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen it in stores as well.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if maybe the patch is related to the disc release, which is why they had to do it. And they did something goofy with the patch.
I don't know, but I sure hope they patch it again. Because I think it's pretty crazy that this is not a super complicated looking game. I mean, all games are hard to make work, and I understand that. But
the programmer in me wants to fight you.
Well, I mean, it's not large in scope, though, right? Like, you know.
No, there's only so many things that could possibly happen in this game. But yeah, I mean, DuckTales is it's a very old game. I mean, clearly it's been remade here, but it's pretty simplistic overall. And I'm just a little surprised that they're having this much trouble stabilizing it. And I think, you know, when the patch that you talk about on the day it's released takes 2 months to come out, maybe make sure that it fixes all of the crashing bugs in the game.
Yeah.
You know, that would be nice. And I'm not necessarily blaming WayForward, because this could come down to, you know, Capcom's QA department or whatever. There's a lot of steps that happen in between there, but regardless, it's unacceptable. And, you know, although I can I mean, like I said, I definitely recommend the game, but I cannot promise you you're going to make it through this game without ever seeing problems. I mean, the original version before the patch crashed on me a couple of times, and that's when I put it down for a long time. I got really angry at it for that reason. And then even after the patch, it crashed on me yet again. Luckily, by that time, I'd already beaten the game, but I just think that's unacceptable, yeah. Especially yeah. this long after the game originally came out. So anyway, that's DuckTales. I do really like it, and I'm overall pretty happy with it, crashing aside. I like it a lot. And finally, I wanted just to mention, I did finally beat Tokitori 2 Plus. Another game nice. That I had to start over from scratch, you know, when the Plus version came out. That gave me a good excuse to go back to it. I got stuck a number of times, and I'm not too manly to admit that I did go to YouTube a couple times to look for help, because I just, you know, I would spend 30 minutes on a puzzle and just, I feel like I've tried every possible thing that I know to even attempt on this, and none of it's working. Or else sometimes the puzzle is like, I try a few things and I kind of try to see how, but some of these puzzles are very complex, you know, I mean, they're not necessarily timing based most of the time, but there's a lot of pieces and there's a certain very specific order you right. have to do things. Yeah. And
now when you felt stumped, when you actually got the answer, was it something that made sense, or was it something that was just so random and off the wall that you never would have figured it out? In other words,
I'd say
goes down to the puzzle design itself.
Right. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times where I just felt really stupid. I was like, oh man, that's like the one thing I didn't try because yeah. I just assumed it wouldn't work, yep. you know? So in those cases, yeah, sure. It's my fault. I should have been a little more persistent.
Yep.
But there were a couple other cases where it's just that one of the game mechanics, it did something that I didn't know that it did.
Right.
And because this game never tutorializes, it never tells you how to do anything. It's completely left up to you to discover how the game works and how every single puzzle element operates. And like, you know, you've got animals that you may go through most of the game without really understanding all of the possible things, all the different interactions that you could have with them. You know, the way that they respond when you whistle or when you stop or when they come up to other enemies and how they can work together. And, you know, I think it's great that these mechanics are so deep that there's a lot to them, but there were a couple of times where I saw the solution and I'm like, you can do that? You know, it's like, that's not a great feeling when I feel
yeah,
like,
right. exactly.
you know, I feel like there was maybe a key piece of information here that they assumed I would have figured out by now, but there's no way for them to actually check whether I learned this except just to test me. And, you know, when they throw a puzzle at me and I don't have all the information that I need to get it done, it's unlikely that I'm going to randomly figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a design conceit they made by not tutorializing.
Yeah.
But you do you expose yourself to not basically being too obtuse.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I think with the Plus version, the game is a lot less obtuse, but that mostly applies to the structure, like the overall kind of progression that you make through the game. And that became a lot more clear to me playing through the Plus version. And I felt a lot less lost and a lot less confused about where to go next. But within the individual puzzles, I don't think they really tweaked those very much. And some of those I still do feel like are maybe fall on the side of being a little too difficult or just a little too obtuse, like you said. Like maybe there should be, I don't know, some other visual clue in the environment or just something.
But the thing is, like, there are multiple paths that you can take, and I think it's possible to get down a path pretty far, and then if you don't go back to this other path, then you're not going to have seen this, you know, particular solution to a puzzle. But that's just the thing. You kind of have to train yourself to teleport back to the beginning sometimes and see, okay, did I miss anything? And
I understand that, Guy, but I mean, I'm talking about stuff that, you know, I mean, it's a nonlinear game and there's a large portion of the game that it splits up into multiple paths. You can take them in any order you want. And I'm totally fine with that. But mm-hmm. when it gets down to there's only one path left, and if I'm going to beat the game, I have to go down this path, and there's really not, you know, I've already done everything else. Right. So that's when it's like when there's a mechanic that I don't fully understand and I'm essentially at the end of the game, like I've basically seen everything I'm going to see in this game and I still don't really understand how some of the stuff works. That is frustrating. And
I don't know. I didn't really have that problem. So I think that perhaps
you just suck at this.
No,
this
but, you know, like, it's very easy because sometimes the hints, like, I don't know about the Plus version, but sometimes the hints were very, very, very subtle. And you had to pay a lot of attention to, like, what's going on around the you know, Tokitori. And it's not always obvious, right? Like, it's not, you know, like, if you might be looking at Tokitori being picked up from the water by a bird. And if you don't look that the grass is growing where the water falls off Tokitori, then you're not going to, like, that's an important clue for solving a lot of the puzzles. But, I don't know. I
open your eyes, man.
I felt like sometimes, like, by trying a couple of things over and over again, then I would notice, oh, okay, there's this thing going on, and usually turned out to be important, and usually turned out to be the key to solving the puzzle.
Yeah, it's a case where I feel like, and I, you know, you could probably say this about Fez as well, but sometimes the key to understanding how to solve a certain puzzle may be like on the other side of the world. So maybe you saw it at the time, but you didn't understand it at the time. You didn't really pick up that maybe that's important to remember because they didn't make you use it right away.
Right.
And then like 3 hours later, when you're on the other side of the map, now they're asking you to really put it to use to solve this puzzle. I mean, that is a way to design a game, but you know, it's obtuse. And you know, I don't think anyone could argue that Tokitori 2 is not an intellectually challenging game. And if you yearn for that kind of thing, I think it's a very special game, and there's not much out there quite like it. And I have a very deep respect for it. I think it's lacking game design polish in just a couple of places. And unfortunately, those couple of places I found deeply frustrating. And luckily, I had ways to get past. I had access to, you know, other people to help me. But overall, I mean, I really adore the game. I'm very happy to recommend it. But I'd say, you know, it's very challenging, and it does not hold your hand. And in fact, really quite the opposite. So, you know, it's a unique game, and there's, you know, it's a good choice on Wii U for sure. Of course, they just released the original WiiWare version of Tokitori, the first Tokitori, on Wii U eShop. And I think right now you can get it for $2. I've already played that game. I played it on WiiWare, and I really like that one too.
Is it up-resed or something?
I think they did a couple of... Yeah, I mean, I think they did some like really minor touch-ups.
Yeah, it's the version that they put on Steam after the WiiWare version.
Yeah, so basically it's a little bit up-res and you can play it on the gamepad is the primary difference.
And you can rewind when you get stuck in a puzzle. Mm. If you're in a dead end.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, if you screwed up.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, because technically speaking, you could have always gone to the Wii and then launched the Wii Shop channel and bought it. And
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I mean, even then on the Wii Shop channel, I think it's $10. So now you get it for $2 on Wii U. That's great. Ooh. It's a really good game, and it plays very differently than Tokitori 2. So it's quite a distinct experience. But anyway, I've talked for too long. So why don't we move on to James?
Okay. So I went and did some more Spirit Camera, which is still really hard for me to get the opportunity to play. Played it outside during middle of the day, and it was cold because it's November. But I was actually able to see the thing and actually use it. But I also was cold, so I said, you know what? No, this game's not worth it. It's not even in the slightest sense of the term worth it. So I will never finish that game. I have no shame. I bought it for the show, so don't say anything. I sacrificed. I finally went back and finished Project Cross Zone, which I never actually gave concluding thoughts on. My biggest problem with the game is that it's like 40 hours long. Mm-hmm. At some point, you start to go, okay, this is getting really long.
And it's repetitive, right? I mean,
it's stupid and amazing and ridiculous, but eventually you run out of stupid, amazing, ridiculous things to see. And once you get the last couple characters, you know, a couple missions in, you've seen all their dumb, ridiculous bullshit. So there's still like 4 chapters left after that. So guess what you're doing? You're slogging through 4-hour-plus long chapters that you don't really have the same motivation you had before to see the end of.
Yeah, was it worth it to see the ending, or could you have stopped at that point when you were getting bored?
Well, considering I didn't play it for 2 months, yeah, I could have stopped. I just felt like finishing it off because it was there, and I was like, I'm like one chapter from the end. I might as well just go for it. That was just it's done now. I'm finished. I finished off Ni no Kuni, which my thoughts really were they were when I started the game. It's a competent, very, very well presented JRPG that is very old and unpolished in some places, where contemporaries and even predecessors have already sort of honed down the edges. It's a little bit... It's
old-fashioned.
Well, it is, but it's very funny that the publisher here is Namco Bandai. And when I play the game, I get a lot of the same vibes I'm getting in a lot of ways from, like, Tales games. But a lot of the aggravating things that those games have sort of polished away over the years are here in full effect in this game.
I think that's just a coincidence, because I'm pretty sure level 5.
Oh, no, it's totally a coincidence. It's just kind of a weird feeling. Yeah. Like, whoa.
I think they only picked it up for Europe and America.
It's only for outside Japan. It was just kind of a weird coincidence of this reminds me of Tales games that are like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Which was not great. It's still, it's a good game. I didn't fall in love with it. I've gone through the. I was actually kind of surprised by the depth of post-game content, though. So there's a bunch of quests you get access to, because, I mean, apparently Oliver's primary role besides saving the world is finding where some dude lost his diary. what's funny is, and this is part of the presentation, the other characters in your party become increasingly agitated when this dude keeps losing his diary, to the point where they're just like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. We're not going to go look for it. And then Oliver, being the goody two-shoes, he's like, no, we've got to go help him. We need to go find his dumb diary. And, I mean, how much of the post-game did you get through?
I didn't even try.
Okay. Post-game,
I was so fucking proud that I even finished that game.
Yeah, there's a...
I'm about 10 years too old for post-game content, James.
There is a weird set of these quests that you're supposed to run through the whole game that if you do... I mean, you can pick them up afterwards. That at the end, you unlock this really crazy Alice in Wonderland kind of place.
Ooh.
With like a dude in a top hat and tails, but his head is a giant like rabbit mascot head. Super trippy stuff. And then he sends you on a quest to go basically kill all the bosses in superpowered mode over again.
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't want to play that.
Which is not a lot of fun.
The bosses are really hard the first time.
They're not so bad the second time, except for fighting the White Witch again. That's not fun. But the end is you get to fight this boss known as, like, the King of Worlds. And the result for killing the King of Worlds is like, all right, good job, Oliver. It's like, this is the guy who manages time and space. And they're like, good job. I'm like, wait, what? What the fuck did I just do? I just broke down the door between dimensions and then killed the guy who's managing this shit. And everybody's like, yeah, good work.
Yeah, and it kind of took a
while. Did they give
you like
1,000 gold?
It gives you a bunch of prizes, and you get a stupid trophy for it, and that's it.
I don't know if I should get rid of this because it's a spoiler or if it's a PSA and I should really leave it in.
You have to devote like 6 hours after the game to get through here.
This is a 50-hour game in the first place. I mean,
yeah.
It's not short, it's not lacking.
If you're not near the end already, you won't remember this when you get there. Which is actually a good PSA, because once you finally kill all the bosses in this boss rush garbage, he'll get like, oh, it's monster hunts, and they come in the form of monster hunts. You go back like, I got them all. He's like, actually, no, there's like 5 more. And once he finally says, all right, you really got them all this time, he's like, go through this door, I don't know what's in there. And what's in there is a boss fight. And it's like, oh, thanks for warning me, game. Great. I'm super prepared for this. And then you just get housed because this dude is really strong. So I played through that. I like the fact that the world has a bunch of stuff that gets added afterwards. I think that's a nice touch. And a lot of the game is aware of the fact you have defeated the White Witch, which is good. But the problem is...
Like all the people in the towns?
No, that's the weird part. So the quest givers are all aware of the fact you've defeated the White Witch, but nobody else, including your party... Or the White Witch is. So it's super weird. It's like, I know they want to leave her there so you can fight her again, but why? That boss battle is torture. Why would I want to fight her again?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a 30-minute roller coaster that just is constant drop.
Why would you want to refight the final boss in Xenoblade?
You wouldn't.
I was just happy to survive it the first time.
That boss battle is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And the thing is, once you go through these quests at the end game, I could probably go and house the White Witch in about I don't know, 20 minutes. But that's 20 long-ass minutes.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't feel imperiled like I was when I actually beat her, it's just like, oh my God.
It's one of those JRPG conventions that I wish would die, which is the idea of like the final boss battle being such a slog. You know, it just wears down your endurance. It's like, you know, a lot of times you're just kind of doing the same thing. It's like, yeah, I pulled out all the stops. I used that mega powerful item that I've been holding on to for a long time.
Yeah.
And I finally got to use, you know, like
the Wizard King secret.
I do
in this
like
game.
The feeling of like, you know, this is the final boss. So I'm going into desperation mode. I'm pulling out all the stops. I'm going to do risky things that I normally don't do. That's cool, but it doesn't need to take 60 minutes to fight the boss.
Oh my God. And that boss battle in particular, I'm sure you remember, is long as hell. It's so long. And then when it's, because of course it's the three forms and then like the final form has a million health and it's,
of course.
And you're constantly spending more time keeping the party alive than actually attacking.
I mean, like I said, it's very old-fashioned all the way through the end.
And then the bus cures itself, heals itself. Yeah.
Thankfully, she doesn't. But she spawns denizens who are really powerful.
Well, and the thing is, too,
most
like,
insulting thing.
You just know the first time through, you're going to screw it up because you know there's a whole bunch of forms and you're never going to know what's coming, so you're not going to be able to plan for anything.
No, the worst is when you screw it up on like the first form and you're like, oh God, how close did I actually get?
Yeah.
like I almost beat her, and they're like, or did I? I don't know. And then when you beat her the next time, you're like, no, I wasn't even close.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an interesting game that, you know, I like but don't love. But the game I do want to spend some time on, which is actually a Nintendo game, although the 3DS games were, I actually pulled out an old Wii classic, Trauma Team. Because it's a game that I know Johnny and I both played and both really enjoy.
So did
I. There you go. And Guy also really enjoyed it.
I have not. What a surprise.
Yeah, I know. It comes – and it sort of comes up in weird context because there's so many different things in that game.
Yeah.
So it can sort of pop up – you know, you're talking about Ace Attorney games. Well, the stuff with the coroner.
Yeah.
The coroner stuff pops up and it's, you know, it's pretty tightly related. They – pretty clearly modeled some of the gameplay on what they saw out of that series.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we're talking about some of the stuff with like Wii Remote sort of dexterity gameplay, and that game is everywhere in there. It's just, it's kind of a weird jack of all trades that allows it to pop up in conversations on the show. So I felt like, yeah, you know, it's a good time to sit down and maybe play the first couple chapters of every doctor in the game. So I'm about two in for everybody. And what I found is that, A, I don't remember the story being as stupid ridiculous as it is. And I mean, I always remembered it to be stupid ridiculous, but for whatever reason.
It's super crazy. I mean, whereas the other Trauma Center games before that, they were very much anime style, so they're a little over the top. Sometimes they'd have weird comic characters. But overall, I'd say the storylines are fairly serious.
Right.
And in this game, it's so weird because it simultaneously Trauma Team is way more serious than any of the other Trauma Center.
Oh yeah, it's super terrible.
Games. It's also way crazier and more comedic than any
other. Yeah, in the same game, you'll have a description of a victim just like their nails being all broken because they were being pulled and they were just scratching against the floor.
Oh yeah,
and then you've got a physician who dresses up as a superhero. You know.
No, he is a superhero. He doesn't dress up as one.
He's actually not nearly the goofiest thing in that game, though. I mean,
no, he's not.
The superhero stuff is treated fairly seriously. I mean, it you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it's not played strictly for laughs.
No, it's part of making him a sympathetic character.
Yeah, but I would say one of the craziest things in the game is the endoscopic surgeon's butler who's like secretly a ninja.
No, they're all secretly ninjas.
This just makes no
She's
sense
She's secretly
whatsoever.
A ninja too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. It's
they're
just,
all ninjas. Hanzo is a ninja. She's a ninja.
Not,
her father's a ninja clan leader. I mean, it's
not what I would expect from a Trauma Team game.
She she has a private jet, which is apparently funded by ninja money. I mean, it's...
You know that ninja money. It's quite lucrative.
There's a surgeon who's on death row.
Yep.
And it doesn't have a name. And
nope.
It's such a bizarre game, and it's so wonderful.
He's kept at a low temperature for some reason. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's very much like a Wii Sports kind of deal where it really is like all these different game modes that all play very differently, but they all use the controller in really interesting ways. And it just comes together better. But of course, it has story, and as crazy as the story really does make you care about what you're doing a lot more. And it's well written, it's well animated, it's well voiced, and it makes you want to keep going to find out what happens next. But I mean, it is such a humongous game. There's so much content, and almost all of it is really good.
And when you think it's almost over, like, actually, that was the first half of the game.
Yeah, I would say Trauma Team is easily in my top five Wii games. Easily.
You know, I remember a lot about the game. What I was surprised about picking it back up was how different it feels, because there's not really anything else out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm multiple years removed from this game. I mean, the last time I really seriously discussed it was after the binational trade agreement that sent Trauma Team and Chibi Robo Park Patrol to the UK in exchange for Jam with the Band and Inazuma 11. So, like, it's been a while since I've talked about that game, and it was kind of, you know, even experiencing it through someone else playing it for the first time. So it was kind of weird to get back into, like, all these, like, oh yeah, I remember this. I didn't remember this before, but I remember this now. It's a very strange game that I mean, it's a real shame that it never got out of, you know, Japan and North America, because it's really good. But it's also kind of a shame that Atlus just sort of dropped the series after that.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't give up on it forever.
No, but I mean, they haven't. It's been quite a few years now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see it pop up on, you know, PS4, Wii U, or something like that next year, even a couple years from now. I don't think it's nearly too late for this. You know, I think maybe what they realize is with Trauma Team, I think they got a little burned on the fact that they'd released so many different Trauma Center games over the previous 3 years.
And a lot of
them
were just remakes of the DS game on Wii.
Yeah, or they just weren't as good. Like that sequel on DS was not very good. I'm not a big fan of that one. And I feel like with Trauma Team, they put so much into it, and it's such a huge leap forward for that franchise, but they'd already fatigued the user base so much.
I feel it really suffered from the first Wii games' kind of lack of feedback when you fail. I remember having a lot of trouble with that game, because it just you would fail, and the vital signs would drop, and you weren't always sure exactly what you did wrong. And
the vital signs are dropping constantly anyway.
Yeah, if you're doing surgery, this person is dying, so you have to actively keep
them alive. There were times when if you did not do exactly what the game wanted, then like you would, you know, the vital signs would drop precipitously. And
that got better with the
you know, like the first Wii game sold very well. I think that a lot of people perhaps weren't ready for how difficult it was. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think perhaps Trauma Team just suffered from that, from people having kind of a negative impression of the first game.
I would be absolutely thrilled to play another Trauma Team game. I just don't – it's a weird situation, because I'm not sure where they can go now. I mean, I don't want to spoil the game, but that game gets super dark and super insane.
Mm-hmm.
It would be hard to top, let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to make you wait a little bit longer to hear from John, because first up, Guillaume has some games he needs to talk about. Needs.
Yes, I desperately need to talk to people more about Wii Fit U, the most important release of this decade.
The worst named game ever.
No, I like Wii Fit U, and I don't know who I was kidding by holding off on buying a Fit Meter, but it's done. I ordered received a couple of Fit Meters, and it's... They are pedometers, very, very basic pedometers, and I guess, you know, there's not that much to say about them. They count your steps. You can't use them if you don't have Wii Fit. So you absolutely need, you know, to start them up, to prime them, you need to have a gamepad, and you need to transfer your Wii Fit U data to the pedometer. So it's going to send the your height and weight and... you know, like all your info, your you know, postal code. And from there, you know, it calculates how many calories, like it estimates how many calories you're spending as you're walking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hear in a lot of podcasts, oh, it's, you know, like the stocks of Poke Walkers that they couldn't unload. Well, that's not really accurate, because I'm sure there wasn't really a lot of Poke Walkers that they couldn't sell, because the thing came with a Pokemon game, and I hear... those games sell pretty well. But also, the Wii Fit U pedometer has an altimeter. So it can tell, you know, when you're climbing stairs instead of just walking. And I actually like that very much. Like, it does, you know, it does incite me to perhaps, you know, not take the escalator, not take the elevator so much, and just, like, take the stairs and, you know.
Oh, that's the point.
Yeah, absolutely. In the couple of days that I've had it, I have kind of changed my habits a little bit. Like, I've noticed, okay, when I'm at work, I really don't move a lot. So I've started, you know, taking walks a little bit more. I don't know if that's going to, I'm going to keep that up.
All that walking. I may just start sitting on my ass again for 8 hours a day, but
there's only so much goofing off you can do at work.
We fit you cost Guillaume his job.
Well, you know, like, it's hard to get into good habits, right? Like, yeah. If you don't, yeah, it takes a while. And
it's true, though. But, I mean, just being aware of what you actually do sometimes is helpful, though.
Yeah. So there is that. But also there is the fact that you look at your Wii Fit meter and you see, okay, it's lunchtime and I haven't burned off the calories that I've ingested with my breakfast. So do I really need a can of soda with my lunch? Maybe not. So yeah, like it can, you know, just being aware of how freaking difficult it is to burn off calories has made me rethink some of my meal choices.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That vat of Crisco for lunch ain't doing it anymore.
No. Nope. As far as when you sync back the pedometer to the Wii Fit U software, there is not that much to say. It's a little bit of a wasted opportunity. You've got your little avatar that goes through the number of miles that you're supposed to have walked off during the day. But it's not like it's just, you know, your avatar walking on a little map of New York, you know, and going past monuments or, you know, but you don't see really the monuments. Like, it's just like little pictures on a map. There's no, it's not a street view kind of thing, you know. Like,
trust us, you just passed something important. We'll tell you about it later. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's not terribly exciting. Just keep walking. And it, you know, it's very basic. I think it's a little bit of a missed opportunity. What is cool, though, is that by doing this, you unlock different outfits. So I've got, you know, I apparently climbed one of the pyramids. So I've got, you know, a pharaoh's face on a shirt that I can proudly wear.
But not a hat. It's a face on a shirt.
It is a face on a shirt. Yes. However, there are other mini games outside of the fit meter where you can unlock different costumes. So if you look at the video review of Wii Fit U by Scott Thompson,
it's good. I saw it.
Yeah, you can see at some point you see the NWR community, and you can see me in my little waiter outfit. And
all class, buddy.
Classy, yeah. And recently I've unlocked a diving suit. So complete with, you know, a tank of air on my back and, you know, the mask and everything. So now whenever I'm doing exercises on the TV, my little me is in the diving suit. And
can you wear the salsa dancing dress over the top of your diving suit?
I haven't unlocked that yet, if you can believe that. You know me, I'm always salsa dancing, but somehow I haven't been able to unlock that outfit.
Oh.
I'll switch to it as soon as I manage. But
okay. Well, based on everything I've heard from you and from the guys on Connectivity, I'm really excited for Wii Fit U after all. And I'm on the lookout for a cheap balance board right now.
I do have a question about just the marketing here. Can you even buy a new balance board right now?
No, I don't. They've never sold them on their own.
I know, never. But I mean, can you even get them? Like, is Nintendo even still making them?
Well, no. I mean, that's the point. It's like, no? I said last week, it seems like they're really kind of marketing this towards their hardcore users to kind of get some word of mouth going before they fully release the game at retail. And the reason I said that is because in order to play Wii Fit U right now, you need to own a Wii U, which makes you already pretty hardcore, but you also still have to be hanging on to your balance board from the previous generation.
Sure.
I just think relatively few people are going to fit in the nexus of those two qualifiers.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, right now it really seems like not a beta because the software works and it seems pretty complete, but it does seem like a kind of a soft launch or something. And
it's a very, I think it's an intentionally soft launch.
It's a hover.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, like right now, the idea is that you download the software for free, you try it for a month, and you unlock it by paying $20 for a Fit Meter. But when the promotion ends early next year, it's going to be you're going to have to pay $50 for a Fit Meter and probably the game on a disc, I suppose. And there's probably going to be a bundle with the balance board.
Oh, definitely. So. Yes. I think it's going to be like $100 maybe for the game and the balance board and the Fit Meter.
Weren't they up to like 110 when the Wii Fit Plus came out, or am I?
Yeah, but I'm sure it's cheaper now.
Mm.
I remember Wii Fit Plus, I think, was a $30 game, so even the software itself is cheaper now, I think, than it was at the time.
Right.
And that was on a disc. I mean, that's one of the big things for me is the fact that I can have Wii Fit U on the system and I don't have to change the disc, which became eventually that's why I stopped playing Wii Fit. It was, I liked it. I liked the idea of using it every day to kind of keep tabs on things, but it became, you know, either it was the only disc in my system, I never played anything else, or it became this huge hassle that I didn't want to go through to change the disc out every time. And the Wii Fit channel is only useful for like measuring yourself. And so I started using that, but I would only measure myself. I wasn't actually doing anything in Wii Fit. You know, so I wasn't actually playing the game anymore. I was just using it to track my progress, but I wasn't making much progress because I wasn't playing the game anymore. So the idea of having it all on there all the time and I can still have whatever else in the system at the same time is very appealing.
Yeah, I feel like Scott gave it a pretty good score, 9 out of 10. And I feel it's justified because there's just there's so many more reasons to keep at it this time. You've got the community. If you feel competitive, you know, you can compare yourself to someone else and decide to beat their scores. There's the Fit Meter that if it's always on you, then you've always got Wii Fit on your mind.
Nintendo knows where you are at all times.
Yeah, they're tracking you.
There's no, there's no GPS in there. I kind of wish
that you know of.
But yeah, like, so there's so many different ways. There's so many places where you can find motivation to keep at it that, and the mini games are just more fun this time around. So anyway, so the Fit Meter is not the only thing I've been doing this week. Last weekend, I felt in one of these weird moods where I decided to turn on the Wii mode on my Wii U, and I went in. I remember that I had some credits left in the Wii shop. And wow, that was perhaps a bad idea to not leave it there, sitting there, because I went and added more credits and bought a whole bunch of virtual console games.
That's how they
games.
Get you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So two of the games that I got, the first is, well, one of the reasons why I wanted to get more games also is that there's, you know, they've been slowly disappearing off the virtual console. I was like, oh, okay, it's now or never. You know, I already lost my chance to purchase some of the games that I wanted. So I might as well get all the crazy stuff that I haven't gotten around to right now. So, I got Star Parodier, however it's pronounced. I don't know. The idea is that Parodier. And the idea is that it's a parody game of Star Soldier. So it's a shoot 'em up, a vertical shoot 'em up. And it was for the PC Engine CD or the TurboGrafx, except you know, it's the Japanese version that you get when you buy it on the virtual console. And so
I think if you bought the PC Engine, you're already a parody. I don't think you need to be buying parody games to go with it.
Now, did this ever come out over here? Or was this
I guess not. Otherwise, we would have the English version.
Yeah,
on
well,
the
I mean,
virtual console.
That's the thing. I know that some of the Parodius games came over here.
I don't think they came out until way later, like on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was on the CD, so there's voice acting. There, it starts with a long cutscene, anime cutscene. Very confusing, of course, with some anime girl talking to Bomberman. I get that she's in a danger of some sort, and now Bomberman and his army of other Bombermen are building a giant Bomberman robot.
As they do.
And they're also, for some reason, decking out this giant PC Engine-shaped ship. And they've managed to get their hands on the Star Soldier ship as well. And so they're just equipping them with weapons, and they're going to help out this enemy girl. And so, yeah, in this vertical shoot-em-up, you can fly around as a kind of a Bomberman or as a PC Engine. And your weapons change depending on that. You know, if you're a Bomberman, if you get certain power-ups, which look exactly like the power-ups in Bomberman, by the way, you know, like the little smiling fireball and stuff like that, then you're going to start shooting bombs all across the stage, or you're going to shoot a regular laser. If you're playing as the PC Engine ship, then the power-ups look like U-cards, which were the cartridges. For that thing.
Yep.
And eventually you can get like the CD upgrade. And for some reason that shoots homing missiles, but you can shoot CDs, but it doesn't give you the upgrade. So I don't understand the logic there. Perhaps looking for logic in this game is perhaps not a good idea.
Okay. You know what this is making me think is that someone should make the Project Cross Zone of shoot 'em ups. Like from all these different companies, like pull in, you know, the dudes from Choaniki. And...
It's just making me think NEC Corp was on meth.
The Choaniki, though, is not an entertaining game.
It doesn't matter. The characters are funny. That's all that.
Hey, buddy.
Hey. No, it's entertaining. Hey. It's not.
I don't
good.
Know. I find that the joke wears out very quickly.
I don't think Choaniki is actually a fun game at all, but it's funny.
It's not that funny, though.
Some of them are better than others.
Yeah. But Star Parodier is actually a fun shoot 'em up. And there's so much going on. There's so much variety in the levels. And I went through like 9 of them, and they were all completely different, and underwater and over islands and in some playroom of some kind. And the enemies are constantly different. You have like at some point you're going towards an island and you're over the water, and there's a bunch of kappas that you can see, and you know, like super cute and colorful, and you shoot them down. And but those 3 kappas are the only time that you see any kappas in the game.
What are kappas?
They're like frog people. They're a specific type of Japanese demon.
Yeah. Have you been on your island in Animal Crossing?
I don't remember.
Kappan is a kappa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that creature, anyway, some mythological Japanese creature. But yeah, like, and then you know, in the playroom level, you've got little toy cars rushing at you. You've got a Bomberman level, and it's very cool. Like, you shoot down bricks from Bomberman at some point, and you've got the enemies from Bomberman shooting, you know, bullets at you, and you face off the black Bomberman at the end, who's laying down bombs to kill you. You know, like, it's exactly, it's very, very well made. And, the music is really good, and the PC Engine was so impressive. Like, even next to Super Nintendo games, like, the amount of stuff that they could put on screen without slowdown is just amazing.
Yeah.
And the colors just pop out at you. It's so good.
Well, it was a midway between the Super NES and, you know, the true 16-bit consoles. I think it was pretty much like 2 8-bit. It was like, had 2 8-bit chips in there or something like that. Anyways,
right.
It was pretty much a super, it was a souped up 8-bit console.
Yeah, but there are some things that it did better than the Super Nintendo, such as, you know, like running games without slowdown. And also the color palette is so bright that, I don't know, it's really appealing.
That's a feature of that system. That system had, from one thing that it had over its predecessors, and really, I mean, it kind of stands up with the successor systems, is how much color, how many different colors it could present on screen at one time.
I've always found TurboGrafx games to be a bit garish. Like, you know, is just some of the colors. I think the good thing about like Super Nintendo games, for instance, I think it could do all the colors that TurboGrafx could, but because it could do far more colors, they were able to like put in some shades and kind of tone things down a little bit. Like TurboGrafx games to me always look so primary. There's something almost like neon about the colors in those games.
I would say cartoon-like, but
I do wonder if that was just part of the culture of TurboGrafx games though.
Like, it could be, yeah. It could be an artistic choice, but you know, I mean, the system, I mean, Guy is right. The system definitely has like a certain look to the games, just like Genesis games have a certain sound to them, you know.
Bad.
Well, it's like that crazy slap bass, you know, shit. Yeah.
It's true, man.
John, could you just give us music for us to
share? I'll be here all night again.
games like this and New Adventure Island just, you know, bursting with colors, look like cartoons to me, and I love it. It makes me wish that I had had TurboGrafx back in the day. And this game, you know, like, the this is a vertical shooter, but it doesn't get hard until pretty late. So I was able to get through 9 very pretty long and very varied levels. So I definitely feel like I'm getting my money's worth. You know, like, it's not just like trying the first level over and over again and dying. So yeah, I recommend it. The other game that I got very quickly, because I haven't played it that much, is called SCAT. It's an acronym. I'm sure that to people who've never heard or played this game, it brings up horrible images or arousing images in James' case. SCAT is an acronym, and it's really another shooter. And this one has the particularity of you're scrolling sideways for most of the time, and but you can shoot back and forward. Like, you can turn around when you press back on the D-pad. You actually turn around and shoot that way, and enemies can arrive from all sides.
So it's kind of like Sidearms, if you remember that old Capcom game.
Maybe. But also, you've got these options.
I'm old.
No, I don't actually think of it like Sidon. I've actually played this game. I am familiar with
Forgotten Worlds. No,
that might be it. Yeah. That might be it.
Well, Forgotten Worlds switches too. It has overhead and side scrolling. Forgotten Worlds.
You play as. I do remember this because it's so fucking ridiculous and it's so of that era. You get to pick as two characters, Arnold or Sigourney. Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Yep.
Wow. But yeah, I haven't gotten very far. There are, like, one of the other particularities that you've got these options around your character that you can, if you press one of the buttons, I think A, they start moving around your character. And then if you press again, you can lock them into place and they're going to shoot wherever they're aimed. So that's the thing. Like, your enemies can come from all sides. So you have to manage these options and make sure that they're pointed the right way. To help you survive. But the game is very difficult. It's a Natsume game somehow. They're not known for their shooters. It's a pretty late NES game. And I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to it. It's pretty impressive for an NES game, but it's, you know, after Star Parodier, it can't really compare.
Well, keep in mind that Natsume of the... This was like a 90, like 1990. Natsume of that era wasn't quite as ingrained in the place they are now. I mean, they were made
right before Harvest Moon. Yeah. They made more action games. I mean, they did that.
They did RPGs too. I mean, they were all over the place. They were.
What was that action game they did? I think for Super Nintendo, like it was like a co-op. It was a two-player co-op game. It was really fun, and it was kind of like top-down perspective.
I used to really love all their games.
Pocky and Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's Natsume, isn't it?
Pocky and Rocky is Natsume.
They made a bunch of those, and those are really fun.
Yeah. I always jumped to Wild Guns. I'm thinking about their action game, which is also kind of a... Yeah, I mean...
That's on Virtual Console.
Yeah, it's also really good. They were a different company back then, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, they were one of the top-tier NES developers, for sure, at that time. They put out a lot of good shit.
I guess finally I've got this game I played a couple of weeks ago, and it just never, you know, it was never the right time to bring up because we're always running out of time.
I can't believe you're finally going to get to talk about this.
Oh my God.
All right. So SteamWorld Dig, pretty damn good. But for some reason, it's one of those games where I kept hearing about it and I kept hearing it's very good, but I didn't have any desire to look it up and see exactly what it was all about. So I saw it compared very wrongly to Terraria, and that immediately gave me the wrong mental image. Like, it's going to be one of those really kind of not very competent 2D platformers with, you know, all the, I don't know, like the physics that don't feel
right.
Send
your hate mail too.
It's going to be... Well, it's Terraria is not really...
There are people who love the hell out of that game.
I'm not a huge fan of that game.
Sure, but it doesn't look like the main appeal... Yeah, it doesn't look like the main appeal is the platforming itself. It's more the different stuff that you can do, combining elements or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just more like just kind of construction set sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. But SteamWorld Dig is not about that at all. And it's got the... it's more about platforming. Like, sure, you're digging and you're going deeper and deeper into these mines. But I guess... I don't know. Like, it's really hard to explain what the appeal is. It's just very addictive to dig these tunnels and find the next little piece of ore that's going to give you money to buy upgrades for your character, and then which is only going to allow you to dig deeper into the tunnels.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the same appeal that games like Minecraft have. It's the idea of the first.
Right.
I'd say it's more like Diablo, James. There's a loop to it. There's a built-in addiction loop. That Guy's talking about, where it feels like you're constantly getting a little bit better, like you're almost grinding for these resources that you're getting, but they're worth getting because they make what you're doing easier to do, and they let you see the new places that you haven't been to before.
Well, see, I think that feedback loop exists in Minecraft and its various clones as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're getting resources to make tools that make it easier to dig, to get resources to get tools. Make it easier to dig.
Yes, I agree with that, although Minecraft is 3D, so it's inherently more complex.
Oh, yeah, sure. The same kind of emotional, self-fulfilling, like, oh, damn, I got me some iron now. I'm going to go make some better tools.
Yeah, there's some of that. Yeah.
Right. So usually this kind of addictive quality to games, I try to resist. Like, I don't really enjoy games like Tiny Tower and stuff like that because I find them somewhat, mindless, and I don't really like feeling like I'm just pushing a button all the time and I'm being rewarded for just pushing a button. But here, there's actually some thought that has to go into how you dig your tunnels if you don't want to create one where you're just not going to be able to come back out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do at that point is just basically kill yourself, and you're going to restart at the town. But still, like, you want to try to avoid that situation. But what really made me love the game is the platforming, because the physics are just right. You know, like I really dislike. You know, when I was thinking of Terraria, I was thinking of this game where you jump and you go in an arc that really doesn't. Feel right, like you go up at the same speed as you come down.
Yeah,
there's
it feels
no
really
sense.
Stiff, really, really stiff.
Right, yeah, it's that kind of feeling that makes you think I'm playing kind of a flash game.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but here the physics are more like Mario. They're more like Mega Man X, I would say. And right away, you have the ability to jump up walls the same way that you would in Mega Man X. And that just won me over. I was like, oh, this is awesome. It feels so great to control this character. So yeah, like at that point, I felt really stupid for not paying attention to what people were saying about the game before.
You know, I'm sort of in the same place you were in, where it's just like, yeah, I know people really like this game, but, there's no... All you hear is, yeah, this game's great. But since there's no kind of secondary push from any kind of marketing to go with it, you just... Keep hearing, yeah, it's great. I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Dude, it's been on sale like 3 times since it first came out.
That's different than, talking about the game. That's just putting it on sale.
Well, right. Sure.
But
every time it goes on sale, more people play it and more people come up and say, you know what? I heard about this game. It really is that good.
Yeah, it's just
I mean, it has tons of word of mouth.
It's just a weird game where you can know it's really good, but still really not know that much about it because...
Yeah, because you feel like when people talk about it, yeah, it's really good. You still feel like all you know about the game is the title.
And that's really good.
It has the word, the title has the word dig in it, and you're like, okay, I think I know what this game is about. And that's what it is about. You're digging tunnels, but that doesn't tell you just how addictive that activity is and just how good the platforming is. And I don't know. All I can say, I guess, is that people who haven't checked it out should at least look at videos.
Is there a demo out for this game?
No, that's too bad. I wonder if they might be working on that, because I think that would be smart.
Absolutely, because I would definitely play a demo of this game.
It's inevitable this game's coming to other platforms. Probably to Wii U, probably to Steam. I mean, it's too perfect not to put this on Steam.
Yeah. As you dig down...
It's got Steam in the name.
Yeah, as you dig down, you get different abilities, upgrades, not unlike something that you would find in the game like Metroid, except that I don't really agree that the game has a, I wouldn't slap the Metroidvania label on this game.
Oh, no.
you do have upgrades that upgrade that give you more mobility, but they're not really going to unlock new places in the same way that the Metroid game would. It's still very basic. Like it's very like, okay, before you had this ability, you couldn't fall down this shaft, and now you can. Or before you had this drill, you couldn't break these blocks, and now you can. It's not very complex in that way. But
they're more upgrades than keys, you know. Whereas in Metroid, the upgrades are also keys. But in SteamWorld Dig, they're really just upgrades. But they're fun, and they make the game play a little bit differently.
And you want to go back up constantly, because that's where you're going to sell your ore. That's where you're going to buy upgrades that are going to make these items that you got more powerful.
And they require you to go back up.
And they require you to go back up because, you've got this lantern and your field of vision keeps shrinking. And at first I thought, wow, this is going to get really annoying because I can't really see where I'm going. I can't see the ore that I want to get to, and this is really annoying. But then I felt I came to appreciate the fact that it gets more and more claustrophobic, you know. So you do want to go back up just to be able to finally see more and to breathe more. And I felt like that was a neat little thing, you know, just the fact that the walls are closing in on you all the time, you know. But yeah, great game. I felt perhaps it lasted a little bit too long. Like I would have liked more variety in terms of enemies, and there's only three main areas, and I would have liked to see, you know, more diversity in them, or perhaps more diverse obstacles in them, because there's not just dirt. There's going to be booby traps as well, like exploding barrels and stuff like that. But I would have liked to see more variety in that. But overall.
But I think that the first two areas are very similar. It's just the second one's harder. The third area is really very different. It looks different, but also plays very different because of some of the features that are built into it. I've said this before. I think the combat just becomes a little irritating because your character, there really shouldn't be combat in this game. There should be like traps. There should be things to avoid. But I don't think the combat is ever really fun. I don't think your character is really outfitted for combat, and it always feels kind of awkward when you have to get into a situation where you're fighting enemies. But other than that, I think it's pretty spectacular.
No, I just love it. I'm really glad that I played it, and people, check it out.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're obviously running pretty long here, so we're gonna do only new business this episode, and finishing that off is finally
Jonathan.
Mr. John Lindemann.
Yeah, so
fucking finally.
Know, so I've been gone for what? For 2 weeks? It's been 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And you haven't played a single game. No. We're done.
No, actually it's quite the opposite. Actually, it's been an interesting 2 weeks. Well, first off, because I missed the Halloween episode. The game I was actually planning to kind of report on for that was Gargoyle's Quest.
Nice.
And so this was a game, I believe we talked about this a long time ago,
we
I
did.
Think. Mm-hmm. And it was a game that I was always curious about. So I grabbed it, and it's good. I really like it a lot, but it's a lot different than what I thought it would be. What I expected.
Well, you being
was
a big
just,
Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts fan, I mean, it's obviously a spin-off of that, but it plays totally differently.
It does.
Exactly. And see, that's what I expected was just like kind of a straight 2D platformer.
It's not.
In the same vein as those other games.
Oh, you know, what's most jarring for me as a fan of that series is when you play it and then the titular gargoyle is not actually very strong.
No.
You're like...
you wouldn't expect that.
But like this...
Oh, they nerfed it now that I'm playing as him?
Yeah,
exactly. And he's such a pain in the ass in the other games, right?
It's like, oh, I can finally be as the Aramur, and oh, he sucks?
Yeah.
God damn it!
Yeah. So immediately, you know, again, I thought it was just a straight up 2D platformer. Lo and behold, I start the game up, and the first scene has you talking to characters in this RPG-style overhead view. And I was like... That's really weird. Why would they have that kind of view? Because obviously this is a 2D platformer, so why would they even have that type of view in the game? Not even realizing that you would actually get put into that view for quite a bit of the game as you kind of wander over this overworld. I mean, I was really a blank slate going into this game. I didn't really know too much about it. So it's the feel of it is very different than what I expected, even in the – I don't even know – the platforming areas. because, and that took some getting used to, the fact that really you can climb, I mean, you can attach to walls, you know, kind of climb up walls, and the way that you can hover, you hover across the screen and then kind of drop. And so a lot of what you're doing is, instead of jumping, you're hopping up into the air, but most of what you're doing is actually hovering around and just kind of making the most of how long you can hover in the air, going up and down. And that's what I like, is the fact that it's not, I mean, you know, you can go up or down, sort of thing. You're not kind of just walking to the right in a straight line and just traversing platforms. It gives them a lot more freedom in what they can do with their design. And so that was really impressive, but I got to say, it took me a while to actually grasp the controls and how to use them properly. But they do actually, they kind of use it in clever ways, you know, like, you know, like, you know, they have like different like floating platforms where you have to kind of time it so that you jump and then you hover in the air just as one platform, you know, goes by to pick you up, kind of thing. And they do a lot of things. They do like blind drops where you don't really know what's down below you, but at some point you can hover and get an item that's just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of interesting stuff like that. And so that was cool. I enjoyed that. But then like the overworld stuff is also interesting as well. And I haven't played far enough into it to really know everything they do with that. Because it looks like, I mean, and there's even, you have an inventory. There's a lot more depth to the game than I really expected. I was really impressed by it. Like, I still don't even know really how to utilize the items in your inventory, but I know that you can kill monsters on the overworld and they give you vials.
The vials are basically your currency in the game.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, there are certain parts of the map that you can go to that really don't necessarily, you can just explore. There's a lot more open than I thought it would be. So
yeah, you've got random encounters when you're in the overworld.
Yep.
Yeah, so kind of in like Zelda 2 style, mm-hmm. where it's just, okay, now you're in a small arena, you're going to kill the enemy, and then you can come out of the random encounter.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned enough times how much I would friggin' love to play the NES sequel, Gargoyle's Quest 2, that like is super rare and like hardly anybody's ever played?
Yeah.
I saw a friend of mine was streaming, on Twitch TV, his playthrough, and the game seems to be a step back in many ways, actually. Hmm. Didn't look that good. So apparently we're not really missing out.
Weird. Because, I mean, Demon's Crest, which another game we've talked about a billion times and is, mm-hmm. Highly sought after and rarely played, is one of the best Super Nintendo games, in my opinion. But it's also very different than Gargoyle's Quest. It's much more like a straight, essentially like a Mega Man X spinoff. You know, like it plays very much more like that kind of game, whereas, you know, it lacks a lot of the RPG weirdness from Gargoyle's Quest and the overworld map and all that crazy stuff.
Although you do have one.
Is there one?
Kind of. There's a mode 7 flying thing. Yeah.
Oh,
and you
okay.
do have a village where you can go inside a town to buy potions, mm-hmm. or
I remember that
stuff.
Part, yeah. Yeah, so I was hoping with Firebrand being in like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and, you know, all these Ghosts and Goblins releases they've been doing, I'm like, Capcom, come on. It's like you're teasing all around these games that I really want to play.
Yeah.
I also wonder, like, now that, you know, DuckTales Remastered seems to be doing really well and they're even giving it like a disc release, like, how about DuckTales 2, people? You know, let's get that out there. Like, that's another, like, you know, supposedly really great Capcom NES game that hardly anybody's ever played. Rescue Rangers 2, I got to play that at PAX East. That was fun. It was exactly the same as the first one, you know, but still, you know, lots of trolling, multiplayer fun. But DuckTales 2 is a whole different story. And, you know, new levels for DuckTales, that's all I need. Give me more levels. Give me more of that. I want to do it. And it's like Capcom has these old games that, look, I think there's a pent up demand of people who like have heard about them and want to play them. And Capcom, they re-release fucking everything they've ever made except the games that, you know, what? That hardly anybody played in the first place. And that, I mean, I can kind of see how that happens. Like, we want to release the ones that people have heard of and that they remember and that
right.
they want to play
like,
again.
Like, people have heard of Mega Man, they just don't remember anything about it because it's been so long.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Capcom, I mean,
you insufferable bastards.
The thing is, during the NES era, they were at the top of their game. I mean, they were they were just cranking games out, and they were pretty much universally great.
Oh yeah, I mean they were right on the edge of the publisher limits every year.
Yeah, I mean, but they had the 2D platformer down to a science. I mean, they were just, their games were awesome. I mean,
and they're all different. They all kind of feel different. They all try different things, and some of them are, you know, very experimental.
You know, I wonder how much of that comes down to just really thorough playtesting. Like just they spent a lot of time just making the game what they wanted, and you know, this doesn't work, let's try changing it. I mean, there's a lot written about the development cycle of the initial Mega Man game, and there is a lot of this kind of like, all right, let's run another iteration on this and see what happens next time.
Yeah.
And I have to assume that that was sort of company-wide policy on what they're working on, because Capcom then and now is a small company.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
Yeah, so I mean, where were those resources coming from?
I think,
you know,
I think it was just everybody works really hard all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the golden age. Well, I was surprised even when Gargoyle's Quest came out on 3DS Virtual Console, because I wasn't expecting that, and I was overjoyed. And you know, I really like that game, so I hope people will check it out, and maybe it will convince somebody to release the other games in that franchise.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I kind of went in as a blank slate, and it is more than worth your time to pick up.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is good.
It's janky in the way that old Game Boy game is going to be janky, but it's also way more ambitious than you would expect.
It's different. It's very unique. More unique than probably 95% of the 2D platformers of that time period. On NES, on Game Boy, anything. You know? It just has a very unique feel to it. It's a really cool game.
Yeah, I think it's just worth your experience to see what this is like, because it is pretty out there.
Yeah. It's like it feels very experimental. Like it was just like, yeah, okay, well, here we kind of want to do a 2D platformer, but what
Not
do you
really.
Think if we just throw these elements in here, what do you think? And they're just kind of like, oh, whatever, it's just a spinoff.
It just got way out of hand.
Yeah. So, but it's very cool. So I will move on to Grand Theft Auto V, which was an unexpected pickup for me. A friend of mine who normally doesn't really play games very much. He doesn't really have time. He has two kids, so he's constantly, you know, shuttling them here and there. But just for kicks, one day he emails me and he says, "Hey man, I got Grand Theft Auto V. It's amazing." Right now he hadn't played Grand Theft Auto V since I think Vice City. So of course, you know, my first thought was, well, of course he thinks Grand Theft Auto V is amazing, because obviously, you know, it's the world is so much bigger. Obviously, they can do so much more with it. Because I played Grand Theft Auto 4. I didn't love Grand Theft Auto 4. Mm-hmm. By the time that game was done, I just didn't. You know, I played through the entire campaign. By the time that game was done, I was just done with it. I didn't feel like going back to it. I actually bought one of the DLC packs. I think like Lost in the Damned or whatever it was. I never even played it. I was done with it, right? Because I just felt the story was just way too dark. New York, you know, as a setting, or the New York-like city, is it was just, there was only so much they could do with it, and after a while, it just the whole tone of the game just really started to wear on me. Yeah. And of course, it had like, you know, the problems with the quest where you drove all the way across, you know, like the entire city, and then you would get killed, and then to restart the quest, you had to start all the way back and drive all the way back across the city. It had all those stupid the same dumb Grand Theft Auto kind of flaws that, you know, they easily could have fixed, but they never did. But
I've heard a lot that 5 really does improve on that stuff, and it also brings
really
back
does.
The kind of whimsical nature a little bit too, right?
Exactly. Yes. So I was like, okay, they had it up on Amazon. They had the you know, the collector's version or whatever. And so I was like, you know what? Because you can play online, right? So, and the online mode is actually quite good. It's a gank fest, but you know, if you got a buddy, it's good, because you can just basically roll around, you know, hop in cars as a duo and just go around and shoot people and just create general mayhem, right? So I was like, okay, well, you know, my friend never really plays games, but he's really into this. So, you know, what the heck? I'll just pick it up, right? So I got it. And I wasn't really expecting to really like it as much as I do. But like you said, Johnny, I mean, the tone of the game is very funny. Now, the one thing I will say that LA as a setting is perfect for Grand Theft Auto, because there are so many stereotypes that they can riff off of. And also, from a game design standpoint, the geography of the area is so good because you can go from a downtown area to, you know, mountains,
ocean.
Yep, ocean. Like, so you have a beach to go to, you know, there's like suburbs, there's all kinds of these different areas where you can all do kinds of different things. So you can, you know, you can go up into the mountains, you can grab like, you know, an ATV and just run off and just drive up, you know, drive up into the mountains and just, you know, or you can, you know, I mean, you can steal planes. You can actually steal like a jet fighter. You can do all kinds Ooh. Of, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff. You can, like like in mine, I think as a pre-order thing, you can get a blimp. And if you run into anything with the blimp, it immediately bursts into flames and you fall down about, you know, 1,000 feet to your death.
Is it fun to fly the planes? This is actually very important to me.
it's, I don't know if it's fun. The thing is, I'm just at the point in the story. Well,
is it not painful?
It's not painful. But actually, I would say with the planes, it's almost a bit too realistic because I found myself the way it shifts the camera almost kind of makes me a little bit nauseated. A little bit. It really shifts the camera in such a way that's realistic, but it's kind of weird. Like it just shifts your viewpoint just a bit too much. But it's pretty fun. I mean, the planes are fine. Like they're not janky to fly around. The controls are a bit touchy. You know, but they control realistically. So in other words, you can't just fly around and do loop-de-loops and stuff like that. Like you actually have to, like, because some of the things that one of the kind of challenges that you can do is flying under each bridge in the game, and doing that, you know, you can't just like, you know, go and like dive bomb them. You have to actually like, you know, kind of circle around and go way far away and line yourself up. So like you can't just, it doesn't let you just like fly around completely unrealistically.
Yeah, I mean, I felt San Andreas was similar, actually. Yeah. I mean, for a game with a jetpack, the you know, in a Harrier jet that like transformed in midair and stuff like that, I actually felt like the plane physics were, you know, realistic enough that it was actually kind of hard to learn how to do it, you know, and I remember failing a lot when I first tried to do takeoffs. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it being challenging as long as it's fun. Because like the driving in GTA 4, I just didn't think it was fun at all to drive around that city.
No, I didn't either. But definitely the flying. I mean, I had the same thing where, I mean, the first time I tried to land, I just completely botched it. It was brutal. but that's the thing. The thing is, once you master it, it feels good because it actually does require technique. So you actually do have to learn. But yeah, I mean, driving around is just so much fun. The cars control. They aren't as, you know, they just control a lot more tightly. And I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, you can walk up to any car and jack it. And I mean, it's just the game. Honestly, no game this year has made me laugh out loud more than Grand Theft Auto V. It's just it's so ridiculous. I think it's actually pretty well written. The characters are ludicrous, but they're not. They're more crazy or I wouldn't say they're likable, but they're more entertaining than any character in Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto 4.
They're not anti-heroes. They're just assholes.
Exactly. I mean, in Grand Theft Auto 4, you know, every character in that game was either annoying or just like a sad trombone. Like,
yeah. I just now imagining Nico's ringtone is just sad trombone. And I'm happy.
It's the only time
that game ever made me laugh, John. Congratulations. Yeah.
but it's so true in that game.
Fuck
it's
you,
like,
Rockstar North. That game's like, awful.
It's like Nico. I mean. He's, you know, he doesn't have some, like, kind of cool background. He's like...
No, he's a fucking war criminal!
He's a war criminal. It's like, wah,
he's all, but no, he really is kind of a downer, though.
He's like, you know? I had such a tough life. I'm a war criminal. It's like, no, you fucking committed genocide, you asshole! The people you killed had a tough life.
Exactly. He's very humorless. He's not likable in the least.
No, if you like Nico, you're a sociopath.
Yeah. And it's just,
well, that's the fun thing about Saints Row, though, is that they totally own that. You know, like all the characters are sociopaths; they're all complete assholes, but they own it and they're funny. They're assholes to each other,
and
they play jokes on each other and they clown on each other constantly. And I think that interaction is a big part of it, also. And it seems like GTA 5, you know, the multiple characters that you're controlling, and they, you know, the stories collide, and all that stuff sounds really interesting to me. So
yeah, and the characters are they're stereotypes but it's okay. They're entertaining, you know. They're entertaining stereotypes. Like, you know, you have the one guy's crazy. The one guy is, you know, he's like a heist, like kind of a thief sort of guy who used to do like bank heists. But he's, you know, the typical kind of like retired mobster kind of guy who really hates his life and wishes he could get back into the game. But, you know, his wife hates him and his daughters hate his, you know, she hates him and his son's a, you know, a chump and, you know, that kind of thing. And then you have like the kid from the hood who's actually pretty smart, but he just hangs around with a bunch of, you know, bozos that are just trying to pull him back into the hood kind of thing when he wants something, you know, he wants to do bigger scores. And so all the characters are really entertaining, probably not likable, but you get a kick out of them. Their interplay and stuff like that. It's well done. I mean, it's a really good game. And I mean, holy crap, the city is gargantuan. It's gargantuan and so well done. I mean, it's really, I mean, I'm really surprised actually at how impressed I am with it. I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I do. And
well, I'm holding out for next gen.
I
get my PS4 tomorrow, and that's where I would like to play GTA 5 at some point next year. I'm sure they'll announce something fairly soon, I'm guessing. But
Anyway, I
do hate to cut you off, John, because you were very patient, waited all the way to the end. But I think at this point, Guillaume is sweating bullets as we, you know, get way deep into new business. And it's been a long segment. It's been a long show to be just new business. But we've all played so many games, and there's stuff that we didn't even get to talk about. I played a bunch of stuff I didn't talk about. John just got a Vita. That's going to have to wait. There's just all kinds of stuff. But anyway, that's new business. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We kind of wanted to get some things off of our chest because, you know, before the telethon, maybe much long before the next episode, but even before the telethon next weekend, we've got Mario and Zelda both coming out on the 22nd.
Oh,
that stuff is going to dominate the conversation coming up.
Why on the same day, Nintendo?
I know, but I really did feel like it was healthy and necessary for us to get some of these games off of our chests before the gargantuan big holiday titles and new consoles for some of us. So I think it was worthwhile. You know, we had a little bit of news picked out, but it wasn't the most exciting Nintendo Direct I've ever seen.
Miiverse is coming to 3DS. We already knew that, but it's still coming. Yeah, congrats.
Exactly. I mean, it's good. It's good that it's coming, but it's not.
And all those games Europe's getting for 3DS are coming out next year.
Yeah, and as far as the spoiler gate on Nintendo Direct, I bet that will come up at the telethon. Oh. If not, someone will call in and ask us about it. And I'll be happy to talk about
it. This is so good.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting topic. So anyway, that's going to wrap up our show. And of course, before we go, you can, of course, send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you know you're not going to make it to the telethon and participate live, go ahead. But if you have like a really awesome question or some idea that you really want us to talk about, and if you're thinking about calling into the telethon, I would maybe hold it for that because, you know, we're definitely going to be promoting stuff and we're going to be asking for people to participate all day long, and we'd love to hear from you in person. I mean, that's even better than email. So if you're able to join us on a Saturday, the 23rd, the day after Mario and Zelda and Xbox and all that other stuff, I really, really hope you will listen live. Of course, we plan to get a recording of the entire thing. We always do. We can't guarantee that will work, but we do, take a lot of precautions and we make a lot of preparations to make sure we can record it, but you never know. And if at all possible,
I hope you'll
listen in live. Not only because, you know, that's a surefire way that you're going to get to participate, but also it's more fun. It's more exciting. It is literally live and anything could happen and we don't know what's going to happen. But we have a lot of guests lined up, a lot of different kinds of topics. We're going to mix it up. We're going to keep it fresh. You know, at no point do I want this to become stale. Like if we're going to be on the air for 8 or 9 hours, I told Carl, and I think we've done this every year. I want it to be exciting and interesting all the way through. No matter, you know, even if you pop in halfway through the day and you had to miss the first few hours, you catch up with it later. I want it to always be engaging and exciting and fresh. And, you know, we get in lots of different voices. We'll have lots of people calling in. We'll change up the format. We got radio trivia, and I think there's going to be a Jeopardy, and there'll be prizes. There'll be special guests from all over the internet, different podcasts. And we're going to talk about space. We're going to talk about movies maybe at some point.
It's just going to get weird.
It's going to be real weird. Yeah. So,
I'm gonna be drunk by hour five. Look out for that.
It's it's very scary. And even after having done it three times, I still get like really super nervous and really kind of terrified before it goes off.
It always feels like you've never done it before.
I know. Yeah, it's a really anxious time, but it's also so fun. It's so exciting once it gets going, and it really doesn't work unless we have people listening. We have people there chatting with us and calling in and participating, but also donating. So, you know, I know it's, you know, a week before Thanksgiving and Black Friday and all that other stuff, but anything you can throw, it goes to a very good charity. It helps kids who are in the hospital, who are sick or injured or there with their parents and in there for a long time. And it's a really wonderful cause to donate to. And, you know, and it helps keep us on the air longer. It helps us do more interesting segments and do more content for you. So if you can put some money into it, I guarantee you'll feel good about it. And we will try to make it worth your effort, worth your money. We're going to try to give you something really cool for it. So please do plan to call in. And of course, you know, there's lots of details over at the website. We're going to have the donation box set up in advance, so you can go ahead and start donating ahead of time if you want to, especially if you're not sure whether you'll make it to the live event. That'll be open all day long. And it's, you know, usually when we get started, we don't know where it's going to end. It always changes throughout the day, and you know, we'll be promoting it. You'll hear lots and lots of stuff from us over Facebook, over Twitter, you know, maybe even some on some of the podcast feeds. But I really encourage you to participate and you know, and try to support this ridiculous thing that we're doing, because we love doing it, and there's a good reason to do it. So anyway, that's all. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Actually, sorry. Okay. Actually, I promised a friend that I would do a plug for him.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Taranto of the webcomic BrawlInTheFamily.com, the artist behind that webcomic and general funny guy, has a Kickstarter for a game that he's developing.
Whoa.
With a Wii U stretch goal. First game he's developing, it's kind of a musical adventure. There's a demo. I think it's a Flash demo. I'm not sure. But that you can play, but they want to make a meatier version. And basically, you're controlling this little tadpole between musical notes, and there's different cool stuff going on, and all with his art, which is very distinctive and cool. So yeah, if people want to check that out, Tadpole Trouble on Kickstarter. He's just waiting for your donations. They're aiming for $30,000. They're up to $17,000, and there's 22 days to go, so it looks very much like they're gonna make it. But yeah, let's hit that Wii U stretch goal of 50,000.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll wish him the best of luck, and hopefully get some people to go check that out. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes for this episode as well. So if you can't remember the name of it, go there and click on the link there and check it out for yourself. All right, that's it, everybody. We're going to go try to get some rest and do some last-minute planning and get everything lined up for the telethon, and I hope you will join us again. It is on Saturday, the 23rd, and it starts at noon Eastern, goes for, we hope, lots of hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's going to be super crazy and awesome.
Oh,
so
it's right
please
here.
Do join us. It is the biggest thing that we do all year long, and we work really hard on it, and we want you to participate.
Yep.
So please come check it out, and we'll talk to you then.
Bye-bye.
I am Terror.
Later.
I like the fantasy I've built in my head that Iwata has a giant map of the world with your Mii on it moving around. And he sees every Mii wearing the fit meters.
Mm.
And he knows where they all are.
And he knows when you're eating poutine, most importantly.
He's going to just call me to his home base or something.
Very shameful.
Yep.
Start his army.
You'll feel like a shock when you eat poutine. You'll be like, what the hell is that?